Hi, I'm Jane Hong, and this is Mending Lives, where I'm talking with people from a patchwork of places. Some have had their lives ripped apart by loss, some are in the business of repairing others' brokenness, but we're all seeking to make this world more beautiful. My guest today, Sonia Leung, is an award-winning Hong Kong poet, fiction and non-fiction writer, as well as a rape survivor. Yes, that's what she calls herself, rather than a victim. How brave is that? And even more courageously, she's written her memoir. It's called A Girl Who Dreamed, A Triumph Against the Odds, and it'll be released at the Hong Kong Literary Festival this month. In this show, Sonia tells us a little bit about herself, but quickly goes on to talk about the rape and how she, I quote, managed to crawl out of a deep hole by finding a way to live with the shame. Hong Kong has its share of sexually abused women, but it's rare for them to speak out. Sonia believes the sharing of her story will encourage more to come forward, and we go on to talk about creative ways that victims can help themselves through poetry, music, for example, and reading books to know you are not alone. Sonia then reads the rape scene in her memoir, as well as a beautiful poem, which you can watch as a reel on IG. In this podcast, you'll also find out something about my efforts to raise awareness about sexual violence in Lebanon and promote Becky's Button, a panic alarm. Becky, my daughter, was raped and murdered in that country by a local guy, and, for obvious reasons, I have great support there. Okay, let's get on with the show. I'm delighted to be here with Sonia Leung. She's an award-winning poet, fiction and creative non-fiction writer from Hong Kong. Her works have appeared in literary journals and anthologies worldwide. She's the author of Don't Cry Phoenix, a poetry collection, and a memoir called The Girl Who Dreamed, a Hong Kong memoir of triumph against the odds. It'll be published by Blacksmith Books in the very near future. Welcome and congratulations, Sonia.
Thank you, Jen. It's really my pleasure to be here.
Well, before we delve into your writing and how much of it is related to the main theme of my podcasts, Transformation Through Loss, please tell us a little bit about your life to date.
Right, to date. I'll be 50 this year. Yes. So I started writing when I was 40, and I joined CTU MFA 2014 because I want to give myself 2 years to really start and to see how, if I can do it or not. And so I did that. And so before that, I was working in the commercial, you know, I'm a businesswoman and just really traveling around the world pretty much. And I just pick up books sometimes at the airport. So it's not very literary kind of reading for me until I did my MFA.
I can really resonate with you in this respect because I won't tell you how old I am, but I quit work when I was 50 and mm-hmm. I thought, I want to write. Mm-hmm. And I also enrolled on that CityU wonderful program in Hong Kong.
Nice.
For 1 year. And then I continued at the Vermont College of Fine Arts in the States. But for me also, yes. Can I do this or not, really? Well, you
exactly.
Obviously can, Sonia. You've been prolific.
Thank you. I think in a way, just for all the aspiring writers out there, just keep going and write one piece at a time and try to put it out and know where you stand in the world. You know, there's a place for you, and if you keep trying. So don't do what I did, really, to run away, because it is really too whiskey. And I was very, very lucky. I met really, really kind people from the airport all the way 2 years. So I'm not encouraging people to girls to run away from home, but I do encourage you to take things in charge, but try to admit that you were hurt and try to get help.
Very, very hurt. I can't imagine if you were only 14. And there's no doubt about it that that kind of trauma really traumatizes. But it can transform. And I was so touched from the reading that I've done of your work that you often said it was the kindness of strangers
yes.
that helped you through.
Yes.
You know, there was such difficulty in your family and in your immediate community, mm. but the kindness of strangers mm. was part mm. of the reason that you got through mm. this event.
Mm. So the therapist was my table tennis coach, and he trained me for 2 years, and he became more like my father because both my parents were absent, but not because
They were working. Typical Hong Kong story.
Exactly.
Immigrants coming over and working
yeah,
so hard.
Long hours in the factory, over 12 hours. And so this guy pretty much took over my life and advised me like my father. And so he took advantage after he got my total trust. And so it's very easy to fall into the following where you just distrust anyone and you retreat into yourself. But I chose, well, I did that for 2 years, and I use cigarettes to burn myself, and I use
self-harm.
Yeah, yes. I use life to cut my wrist because it would stop the screaming inside my head.
So painful.
That's how painful it is. And the screams inside your head could make you jump off the building. And that I also experienced that because I went to my school's, I find a high top point and I want to jump off. But luckily, I also love reading and it also saved me at some point. So it is very complicated. It took 2 years, but somehow gradually I crawl out of that deep hole and then luckily I met strangers who proved to me who helped me without condition,
unconditionally.
So then gradually I rebuilt trust.
Right.
And it took a long
years.
Time.
Maybe it's still there.
It's still there. Yeah, exactly. Yes.
This podcast is going to be a little bit more bookish than ones I will do in the future. But because we're both writers, and I read books voraciously too, I did turn to your works. And your short story, The Moon in a Dog's Eye, that's the one that is very autobiographical, isn't it?
Yes, that's the first piece that I published from my memoir. It's a chapter of my memoir. So I wrote my memoir in like independent pieces.
Essay,
personal essay.
Right. So you built it up over 10 years.
I built it up over 10 years.
I see. Okay. Well, look, I don't know what else you're going to reveal in your soon-to-be-published memoir.
Mm.
And there's no need for graphic detail here mm. unless you know you want to speak out, but mm. I'm wondering mm. as a victim of this assault, I mean, what are the mm. first, if you don't mind me asking, mm. what are the first three adjectives that jump in your mind about that experience?
Painful in a sense that your dignity is being rubbed, you know, like just taken from you so sudden that you feel like you are non-human. You are objectified. You become an object to him. You are, yeah.
Of his fantasy, of his passion, whatever. Okay, that's one. What's another one? Another one. I can see that this is distressing for you, so I don't want you to go there and feel too. Pain. So it was painful. It was.
It's dehumanizing.
Right.
Yeah. And it's also, don't worry if it's too upsetting.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Don't worry. It's very triggering. I mean, I know about, my daughter was raped, and not only raped, but murdered. And whenever I try to go there. I feel all this emotion inside me, and I suppose part of my curiosity for asking you those questions as a survivor is, you know, what did she go through before the worst happened? It's very, very dark. We won't go there.
Yeah. We shouldn't also compare, you know, how damaged, it's terrible that your daughter was murdered afterwards. But what I can tell you is that I would rather he just kill me.
Oh, that's how strongly you are.
That's how strong.
You're right, right. And then I suppose as a survivor, you had to go back home, pretend nothing had happened.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was...
You had to live with that shame, and you had to live with that guilt, and you had to live with that dirt. You know, that feeling that you are dirty, you are not, that you are not worthy of any love or anything. You're just not human anymore.
Did you tell anyone, actually?
No, not until 10 years or more so later when I make it to the U.S.
Right, maybe a more liberal society or maybe...
No, I had a breakdown. And they have no pop. They can't do it. I mean, they had to send me to the healthcare center. Yeah, and I was totally in a mess. And I had to accept counseling. Then it's
it's the kind of Western way.
I can't really say Western way because in secondary school, when I went back to school, I behaved very strangely. And so my teacher
noticed.
She sent me to a social worker, but it just that she because she just couldn't open me up. I was not ready to speak out.
You're right.
And at that time, the culture isn't anything like now. We have Me Too, but then nobody speak of it. And I thought that I was the only one, and I thought I was the bad girl. I thought I was the one that caused him to do something bad to me. I keep thinking, is it my body gesture because I let him touch me during the training, so that so that he think that it's okay to touch me. So I just keep thinking it's my fault.
Oh, so you blamed
yourself. I blame myself over more than a decade. But then, so it just, until I had a breakdown and I just totally, I guess also that breakdown helped me to really let go.
Right.
And I just feel like, okay, if I don't say anything now, I'll probably, you know, it would just become even worse. Next time, I don't know what I would do to myself.
Right.
So yeah.
Now, very quickly, I've recently been to meet the Rain Lily ladies. Mm-hmm. You know about Rain Lily and the wonderful work that ACSVAW do.
Yes.
The figures in Hong Kong of women who have been sexually assaulted.
7 to 1. I mean, yeah.
You have to be careful of statistics, don't you? But yeah. And I don't want, and figures don't help, I think. People, outsiders read this and think, oh dear, terrible, and then nothing changes. It's got worse since COVID.
Exactly.
But the stigma is still really high there, and the shame. That the women feel.
Yeah.
And what can we do to change that?
And not just the same, and also the blaming the victim. It's the society still doing this. For example, recently there's from indie media, the local media, small independent media, they interviewed, I think, 5 girls and they are models. And so the society was saying like, wow, what do you expect? You know, like you agree to take nude photos or you agree to wear so little.
One really distressing for me. Thing for me as a mother is that when the news came out about my daughter, and it did go worldwide, we were getting letters in newspapers saying, oh, she's a loose Westerner. Oh, she must have been drunk. Oh, she was divulging her body parts. And, thank God, that she wasn't. She wasn't drunk. You know, she was in a very modest dress and it was long. But I mean, yes, that victim mentality is really bad. Let me quote you something that you wrote, actually, in relation to that. Back to your short story. You say, I want to add my voice and say to the girls like me who have fallen victim to rape that the incident can't defeat us. We can grow out of the ashes of our sorrows and soar. I loved that. And I loved your story. But how? I mean, if for the listeners of this who have been sexually assaulted, how can they soar? Right, how can they transcend such a horrific experience?
I think also like your wisdom book Under the Lion Rock.
Under Lion Rock,
The Lion Rock, where you talk about the boy who seek transformation through music.
Yes.
I think art definitely help. So for music, painting, or writing, to just find a way to express yourself. And when you can take the narrative into your hands, then you feel the power returns to you.
Right. That makes sense to me. although I'm indirectly a victim, I know that I turn to poetry.
Yes.
I turn to music.
Yes.
I try to keep myself fit, that's another thing. But also nature, and that was another thing that I loved about your short story, that you describe how, I think it is in the opening paragraph, on a late September school night in the small hours, I gaze at the moonlight that slides gracefully through the rusty iron gate of our hut. Her gentle light transforms the entrance and the steps beyond it, giving them a magical glow. Tranquility allures me. The peaceful world out there beneath the moon's gleam generates an urge in me to join here. So it was nature for you as well, wasn't it? The moon, the sun, the stars.
Yes, but that's also from my love of Chinese poetry, like Li Bai and, you know, Du Fu, you know, from because of my love for classical Chinese literature. And so I think that, yeah, so that's related to reading because we're writers. So, but it just, I just keep saying it's because not everyone reads or not everyone, you know, have that poetic, you know, metaphor.
That's true. And, that's very true.
Right? So I'm just saying that, yes, you find a mean, you know, drawing or singing, everything to express yourself.
Yeah, right.
That's most important because, you know, when you start to express yourself and get your voice heard, gradually you will have built up more confidence. So you don't have to be like me and you know, not. I mean, I know I can write because from when I was 10, I was separated from my family and I had to write letters to my mother in order to not being bullied by my uncles and my uncle's son. So from very young, I was trained to write.
Right.
So, but I know not everyone, you know, especially nowadays, many people rely on pictures, you know, which in
evoke thing, right?
Yeah. So I don't want them to feel like, oh, I can't do it. You know, I can't put it like that. Like
her. Right.
So
yeah.
Something
just very practical.
Yeah.
Actually, through books.
Through books or
other people's lives, through listening to this, more
and
practical
exactly.
resolutions as well.
And look up to the paintings and, you know, look to more nutritionist kind of
healthy.
Things. Health,
yes.
You know, like things out there, not just garbage things, you know, that you saw in the YouTube or what. But look up to, for example, that what you say about the association, the ACS,
VAW, yes.
And also there's the N Child Sexual Abuse Foundation, ECSAF, for the Hong Kongers, if you know Xiu Fengfeng,
yes.
She started.
Xiu Fengfeng, I know her, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So look up to associations like this. And then find out their art or their education, you know, all the events and, yeah.
Yes. I highly recommend that. And I will put those links in the show notes on this program. One thing that particularly impressed me, because I went to the Education Centre of Rain Lily, and they had an exhibition of art, mm-hmm. right? They're yeah, using art exactly. to give people the courage yeah. to speak out.
Yeah.
But what particularly touched me, Sonia, is that there were books.
Mm.
And as a visitor to this education centre, anyone could write in these books
yes.
to the victims. So it was yes. indirect
yes.
and it was anonymous. And there were a lot of people had written, you know, very encouraging things.
Exactly.
So there's all kinds of ways
yes.
that you can help yeah. people
yes.
who are keeping things quiet.
Yes.
Because of, for whatever reason, people have their,
yeah.
you know.
They don't have that, they can't speak out yet. So, I mean, yes, a lot of people have been silenced for various reasons, you know, like if they don't have enough. And also, families is really complicated. So.
Chinese families.
yeah. So sometimes, yeah, the support, you really, some people need the support or permission from outside to speak out. But luckily, I think people like us, luckily we find the voice in the books. They
right.
speak to us. And
right.
so we feel that we can speak out.
Right, right, right.
But some people, they don't think that they have the permission
mm.
to do so.
Is there anything that you've written that you'd like to read in terms of, you know, if there are some young people who are listening to this for some answers?
So I wrote about the raped scene vividly because we heard too often about this word raped. And we just brush it aside. Oh, it happened again. Yeah, whatever. So I wrote it vividly because I want people to be in there with me and know what it's like. Yeah.
Can
so
you read it? Are you? Is it okay?
So I
shall I get the tissues ready.
I was like, no, this is just the beginning part. So it's because so we will be targeting about 2 minutes. So it will
Perfect.
Be a very short one.
Please.
Just to give a bit of context, so the rapist, my coach, he told me that because I got very good at playing table tennis, I can get into the Hong Kong youth
junior
champion. Yeah. So then he said that in order to represent to get in there, and I need to have a body check, and to make sure that everything is okay. And he. When he said that, it felt very serious. So I thought that we need to go to the hospital to do so, and it will cost my parents a fortune. Then he said, but it's okay. I can do the preliminary check for you. So that's what happened. He asked me to go to his home, and he's, yeah. I entered his apartment. He knocked the door behind me. A massive TV sat in the middle of the living room, looming. Phone Ning, do you like singing? I've got karaoke equipment here. Coach was removing his jacket when he asked this. Oh, it's okay. Maybe next time. My voice sounded tremulous, thin, timorous, alien to my own ears. The time now was our usual training hour. We should still be in the center with the others. Being alone with him for the first time in his home felt strange and uncomfortable. It was as if I saw myself in a bizarre dream, but I could not reach out to wake her. Come, put down your bag here. He pointed to a corner spot. We'll be quick. He looked me in the eye, and then slowly I let go of my bag. Feng Ling, come here. Stand straight and stretch out your arms, please. I did as told. He went and stood behind me. His hands gave my shoulders a gentle squeeze. Oh, sweetie, you are 14 and you're not yet growing. He had never called me that and never made this kind of comment. It was perplexing and disconcerting. I stared straight in front, fearing to meet his eyes. I was afraid I might find a stranger instead. He kept his hands on my breasts. I stood rigid like a scarecrow. His fingers circled my breast. Sensing my discomfort, he said, "Come with me, sweetie." He moved toward the bedroom.
Thank you so much for having the courage to read that and writing it so other people will read it. Why do you think that you want to speak out and tell in a lot of detail about what happened?
Because, also just to quote Albert Camus, those of us who can speak have a responsibility to say something for those of us who can't. So for your daughter, yeah. Becky, I also speak on behalf of her. I hope I can speak eloquently.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Why did you write in English?
Because it's too suffocating to write in Chinese. For example, in Chinese, we don't say words like love, and so it's very hard to write about feelings. And I wanted to not just tell the story horizontally, but I want to go deep down, dive deep into the psyche. So the vertical line, I want to get it. So in English, it gives me the psychic distance.
Psychic distance, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, to process the story. I mean, so I think every one of us need to find a way in. And so, for example, Maya Angelou, her book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings.
Yes, Maya.
She actually went to a hotel room and to play a bridge and then to get her small mind engaged and then so she can dive into her psyche to write about the past. So I think you just need to find a way into telling how to relive the past and not to hurt yourself too much, but be in a safe place where you can revisit
the trauma.
Because when you are recalling it, you are actually relieving it. So you need to be safe. You need to feel that you are ready to do so. Otherwise, you would hurt yourself again.
Right.
But I feel that when I turned 40, I feel that, okay, I have enough friends around me and I have enough confidence about my English, and so I think I feel that it's time for me to do so.
You had your network. Do you know by any chance if this individual is still around?
No, and I don't want to waste my energy or emotion on him anymore. He's done. I don't want to go there because he's not my problem. The reason that the psychologist I met in the US who could open me up, because he told me this: trauma was not the bad thing that happened to you, but how you respond to those terrible events. Because he told me I responded by internalizing them.
Mm.
So I become disconnected from myself. And it was painful to face my weakened and wounded self. So that way, you know, I understand, you know, it's not about him, it's about me.
Right.
So
gives you the responsibility to try to heal yourself,
myself.
And you don't need him to do that.
Yes.
Yes.
I can face him today, and I can tell him, "I'm done with you. You know, you can't avert me anymore." Because if you keep thinking about him and wanting to get justice done,
yes.
Right, then you are giving him all the power over
right.
you.
Right.
I'm saying I'm taking back the power. You can hurt me once, but you can never hurt me again.
Well, one thing I've experienced as a result, indirectly, is that the kind of suffering that you've experienced gives you an opportunity to transform in some way. Trauma traumatizes, but it also can transform.
It makes you stronger internally. It's like, you know, it's like building body weight. I mean, building body, you know, you lift the weight.
The weights.
To build your body muscle. So the pressure or the trauma is to build your mental muscle.
Right.
So you become stronger and then you are more, you can defend yourself better and you don't need others' approval.
Yes, that's also very significant in dare I say it, sort of more an Asian society, okay. Right? But also, of course, in the West, but I mean, even more so. Would you agree in Asia? I mean, this idea of people looking at you and your family and your...
I think it happened everywhere. And I saw William Silverman. She wrote really about her father's incest, you know, raped her over the years. And also the society would criticize her, you know. Right. Even her mother would bring her... whether you know you are fruit or something, so it's I don't want it to be like
okay, we don't want to generalize,
I think the world is still needs to know that it's a bad thing, and it shouldn't bring the victim.
You've probably taken a little look at what I'm doing in my charity work in Lebanon, and I have this panic button called Becky's Button,
yes.
And we've been focusing in the last few years. On women.
Yes.
And there's so much we can do to make them more safe, to teach them about what sexual harassment is, because we're talking about a Lebanese society, not a first world, let's say. So when I was a child, I didn't know what sexual harassment was. I was, you know, touched up all over the place as a teenager, and it was just like, oh, that's what men do, but of course social mores have changed hugely now. But one thing we're trying to do this year is just for a year, it's a little bit experimental, is to point our gaze at men. They're the perpetrators, and this is going on endlessly. It's increased over COVID. Men, what are you going to do? What can you as a man do to stop your friend from not being a perpetrator or, you know, preying on other women? I think what I'd like to ask you is, I mean, what can we women do? You know, if we had a magic wand, how could we reduce sexual violence?
I think it's like one of my favorite writers is Elif Shafak. She's a Turkish British writer.
Elif Shafak. I love her, yes.
She has mostly female readers, but she said that those when the female pass the books to the male and when they read it, this is, oh, wow, okay. I think reading is definitely one thing to spread the news and to let them understand, because in novels, men can understand better. If I think men in some way they it's hard for them to know what it's like to feel powerless. Yeah. So if they or to admit their powerlessness. So if they read those, you know, if they read more, I think they will have more empathy, and because we don't want sympathy, but we want empathy. Exactly.
We don't lovely. We don't want sympathy. We want empathy. I noticed that you're now working on a third book. What's it called? The 3-inch.
3-inch heaven. Yes.
And the subtitle is Stories of Resilience and Determination.
Yes.
So you're moving on now to short stories about other Chinese women.
Yes.
Are there any in this forthcoming book that have encountered sexual violence? Are you telling?
Oh, yes. Very much so.
Okay. I will look out for
Thank
it.
You. Yeah.
Because, Hong Kong is my home and charity begins at home. And it's... so grateful that you could reach out and then just speak so forcefully and honestly about your encounter. As a bereaved mother, you know, I'm just trying to say honestly what it feels like to lose a daughter. I mean, that's slightly different, but it takes a certain courage
to live on,
doesn't it? To live on, yeah.
To face up, to face your weakened self, and to, because for me, I think also your daughter, she likes sports and really competitive, right? So I myself also, to admit being a weak person, being a damaged person, it's just beyond words. I mean, it just
changed your life.
It just changed your life. And
yes.
it really challenged me to the to the extreme where, you know, I just have to bounce back. And I mean, you know, I'm lowest already and I feel right. myself like a dirt. And so how to pick it? So that's why, I'd like to share one poem.
Oh, please.
Yeah. This is the very first one in my collection. And it's also the first one I wrote when I gradually come back to myself. Yeah, and it seems to speak to both men and women. So, on a desert island all alone, my dearest, please write your tears. Have a piece of candy and tell yourself life is sweet. Even if you are on a desert island all alone, you can still find reasons to live on. My dearest, please lean on a trunk of a frame tree. Behold the brightness of its flowers and tell yourself, life is beautiful, even if you are on a desert island all alone. You can still make your life meaningful. My dearest, please love yourself because you are most worthy.
Oh, dear Sonia. So beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for telling us so frankly about your experience. We're dead serious about making a change, right, in this. That is the most lovely poem. And your memoir will be published soon. I'm going to give details in the show notes where people can buy it. And details of it. Did you say the Hong Kong Book Fair in March?
Hong Kong Literary Festival.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Hong Kong Literary Festival in March.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm.
And
it'll be the French Club.
Oh, just so, next door.
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, I will definitely come to that. And then, we're at the FCC here at the moment, Foreign Correspondents Club. And I think we'll go and have a little drink after this. But did you finish that poem? Or I mean,
I'd like to, if it's a, or as a closing, or
yes,
just to, yeah, I want to share this, the title poem.
Please.
Don't cry, Phoenix. For all the women in the world who have been deeply wounded, let me start again. Sorry. Don't cry, Phoenix. For all the women in the world who have been deeply wounded, legend has it that there's a bird. She flew into a sea of flames and burned to ashes. Dear Phoenix, oh Phoenix, what drove you to despair, to throw yourself into the flaming sea? Between the heavens and the earth, a thousand winds are whispering. The universe is filled with prayers for the bird. All living beings are devoted to her. Somewhere afar, a certain silky smooth shaft of light appears. It's a slim bird struggling to stretch out, to rise. Tears streak from the corners of her eyes. She strives to be rid of the nightmares of her past. Legend has it that there's a bird. She flew into a sea of flames and burned to ashes. Dear Phoenix, oh Phoenix, what drove you to despair, to throw yourself into the flaming sea? Between the heavens and the earth, a thousand winds are whispering. The universe is filled with prayers for the bird. All living beings are devoted to her. Somewhere afar, the silky smooth shaft of light shimmers. That slim bird continues to flap so hard. Her tears evaporate. She fights on and liberates herself from the sea of flames. Proudly, she spreads her wings and soars into the air. Like a brand new leaf in a cherry tree forest,
She enjoys her solitude amidst the thorn, glorying in the beauty of her rebirth.
Thanks again for listening to Mending Lives with me, Jane Hong. It was produced by Brian Ho. You can find relevant links to this show in the comments section. I would not, could not, be doing this without many people's support and encouragement. So until next time, goodbye.